Omnia Vincit Amor. Written by Inisi and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom: Berserk. Rating: Explicit. Relationships: Casca / Griffith / Guts. Griffith / Guts. Casca / Griffith. Casca / Guts. Additional tags: Polyamory, Creepy Fluff, Psychological Horror, Past Rape Non-Con, Verbal Humiliation, Periotypical Sexism, Breastfeeding, PTSD. Summary: Casca, Griffith, and Guts in a cottage after the war. They used to be able to see the castle from their house, a modest little cottage on the northern outskirts of Falconia. Casca can't remember when that changed, or why. One morning, she just woke up and there was a wall in their front yard, shielding that part of the city from their view. Griffith says that it was him, that he erected the stone wall overnight, and, as crazy as that sounds, Casca believes him. Griffith has always been capable of extraordinary things. Guts believes him too, although he's crabbier about it. "Sure looks like something you built in one night," he grumbles. "Talk about an eyesore." Casca knows, if anyone else were to speak to him like that, Griffith would make them regret it dearly and without delay. But because it's Guts, a huge smile sloshes across his face. "You're welcome to tear it down and build a replacement." "Don't wanna." "Too bad." Griffith is still smiling. "I do so like watching her lift heavy things." "Guts," says Casca warningly, the second she notices the glint in Guts's eye. But it's already too late. He's thrown Griffith over his right shoulder and Casca over his left shoulder, with the clear intent of depositing them in the nearest body of water, while Griffith chuckles uncontrollably and Casca yells in rage and glee, and the wall is forgotten for the remainder of the day. So, they no longer look at the castle. She and Guts had lived in the cottage together for a while, just the two of them. Guts hunting small game for food, while she took care of the boy. But it had never felt quite right without Griffith. They'd walked on eggshells all the time, trying not to reminisce about or even allude to him, even though there was no mental walkway that didn't lead them to his person. They had both wept when he finally returned to them, Guts's thick, solid arms enveloping him and Casca in a hug. Is that what happened? There is another, conflicting memory farther back in her mind, of Griffith in full armor, amidst crumbling vaults and disarticulated avian statues. Guts down on one knee and bleeding copiously, and herself holding a small bundle and shrieking for them to stop. Then, in this version of events, it's Griffith's arms that envelop the other two. And then, white light. And then, the cottage. Sometimes she has to stay home to nurse the boy, while the men are off exploring. Griffith insists that it's a woman's job. In her less charitable moments, Casca feels left out, and anxious that Griffith is looking for excuses to shove her aside, so he can do what he really wants to do, what he's always wanted, since that fateful hilltop fight when they'd been little more than children. Now they have a child of their own. He has Casca's thick hair, Guts's bumpy nose, and Griffith's incisive blue eyes. It doesn't seem possible for a child to have three parents, but she feels like she's seen stranger things. It must have been an easy pregnancy, as she doesn't remember much of it. Only that final stabbing pain. Crimson gush, abortive wriggle. Casca has a favorite nursing spot. A wicker chair next to the eastern window with a taburet for her feet. It's got a skirt of sunlight and a clean view to the pine forest, and next to it, a cabinet stacked with wooden figurines that Judo once carved for her. Some of them are disfigured on both ends, The boy has a tendency of sticking them in his mouth. Today, he latches on quickly, and there's the initial sting, followed by relief as her breasts begin to lighten. The boy still doesn't have a name. They can't seem to find one that they all agree on. He has passed old enough to be weaned, Casca reflects, taking note of his fine motor skills and his full head of hair. How old is he anyway? 2? 3? How long has it been since... she and Guts... she and Griffith... Casca is brought to her senses by a blunt sound, the crack of wood breaking. She's knocked over one of the figurines. She can't breathe. Her heart's a sledgehammer, making the anvil of her ribcage quake. The boy doesn't fuss. He only watches her with curiosity. But the sight of him moves her in a new way now, a faint but definite revulsion.
"Hey, Casca,"
comes Guts's voice from behind her. They are back from their outing.
"Did you know that Rickard built an air balloon outside the city?"
Griffith's laughter follows.
"Next to a trebuchet."
None of them venture into Falconia anymore except Griffith. He makes the trip at regular intervals, pleading errands, and when either of them asks to tag along, he always brushes them off. Casca makes practical requests for these city trips, such as tapers, sewing materials, and toys for the child, while Guts never wants anything besides oilcloths for a sword. Well, almost never.
"Hey, I know we're not ones for fancy get-ups, except maybe you, Griffith, but it came to me we ought to buy something from Gaston's clothing shop one day."
"Didn't that shop close down?" Casca doesn't know how she knows that. It feels like there's something else she's missing too, something about Gaston himself, but it's ever so slightly out of reach.
"I'll see what I can do," says Griffith, looking at Casca with an odd acuity.
He rides back from the city later that evening, carrying a saddlebag full of rich fabrics. There are silks and satins, heavy damasks and brocades shot through with a highly complex arabesque, like a map to a garden labyrinth. They must have cost a fortune. Before long, Guts is kitted out in a plumed hat and a court suit with parallel lines of golden frogging, and Griffith looks at him adoringly and pronounces him dapper.
"That why you don't want us going to the city?"
Guts slings an arm around Casca's neck, grinning.
"Afraid someone will steal us away."
Casca ducks under her partner's arm to explore the saddlebag for herself. Dresses, stockings with red and yellow ribbons, a stole.
No one would dare.
"Why not?
You're gonna glare them to an early grave?"
"The glaring will be perfectly bloodless. I'm going to assassinate them to an early grave." A fan, a flowing blouse with lace trimmings, and another dress, much finer than the one that she's got on.
"Oh,"
Casca breathes as she locates a pair of breeches, several sizes too small for Guts, and probably too small for Griffith too.
"Are these..."
Griffith finally glances at her, and her smile is genuine enough it pinches at the corner of his eyes.
"I thought you'd find these more comfortable than the dress." "I do."
It feels like a piece of herself has been returned to her unexpectedly, like she had misplaced an unpopular but vital organ, and her heart beats more vigorously now that she has it back, and her lungs draw in more air.
"Thank you."
"Griffith giveth, and Griffith taketh away."
Huh, where did that thought come from?
Griffith has only ever been known to give things. Swords, blankets, and sparks from his soul. The biggest bonfire in the whole wide world. Days melt together in a cottage. The fuzzy mass of pines runs together with the light blue sky and the snowy abstraction of the wall. Every attempt Casca has made at a calendric system has failed, through an incomprehensible amount of bad luck. A strong wind carrying away her sheet of vellum, water damage defacing her carvings, wild beasts knocking over the markers she gauged into the soil. It's distressing, losing track of time like this. Of course, it doesn't bother Griffith. Nothing ever bothers Griffith. But what's weird is Guts doesn't seem put off by it either. Why is she the only one? When Griffith is away on one of his vague errands, and it's just the two of them and the boy, Casca confides in Guts. "It feels like I'm stumbling around in a wasteland," she says. "It's not that I have no destination. It's more like my destination is a dark, ominous place, so I go around and around in circles, hoping that I'll never reach it." Guts scratches the back of his neck. "I've got no idea what you're saying." She must look pretty disappointed, because presently, her partner turns pliant and yielding, and puts his hands on her shoulders. "That can't be good for you, feeling like that. How long has this been going on?" "Since the cottage," she wants to say. But in truth, if she peers down the tunnel of time, she finds it shrouded in mist even before they moved into this place. Endless years of pale, suffocating misery. And if Guts and Griffith are fine, then maybe there's something wrong with her, specifically. And maybe Griffith would be only too eager to send her off to a hospital or a nunnery if he were to find out. He already seems to view her as a burden. "It's nothing," she says. "Never mind." She makes a little self-soothing gesture. She shrugs. She chases her tail in the wasteland. There is only one bed in the cottage, and it is just big enough to fit three people. Lovemaking is the main order of the dawn hours. Casca gasps as Guts arranges her backside on Griffith's cock before fucking into her himself. It feels right, having both of them inside her. Casca has the sudden notion that if they could pierce through her and be inside each other at the same time, the three of them would unlock some secret code or symmetry that would allow them to live happily ever after. And she wouldn't feel this vague sadness anymore, the sense that they are only together because they couldn't bear to be apart. At some point, Guts pulls away and sits back to watch her and Griffith make love. He pleasures himself, stripping back the foreskin and jerking himself at a lazy pace. Griffith watches Guts with an unusual fixity as he takes her, sinking into the hilt, and Guts's eyes flare back in unmistakable arousal. Even to this day, Casca finds herself dazzled by Griffith. That shining hair, that arrow-like wit, that bottomless desire. She strokes his face and kisses him, touching her tongue to his in a spit-slick slide. The noise that Guts makes belongs firmly in the animal kingdom, a canine growl or leonine rumble. "Look at her, Guts." Ah, yes. Griffith has entered the oral humiliation part of the session. That cruel bend of his had taken some getting used to, both for Guts and herself. But they've learned to enjoy it now, so long as Griffith doesn't go too far. Sometimes he really goes too far. "Look how wet and ready she is, dripping for me, as if being used like this is the pinnacle of her existence." Casca gasps, and Griffith squeezes her breast and puts his mouth on hers again. Of course, it hasn't escaped her notice that Griffith never kisses Guts, not even now, when he looks so hungry for it. He never talks about him in this way. He never fucks him. That's how she knows it's love. "I own her, body and soul," Griffith goes on. "You should feel her, how prettily she opens up for me, how she clenches and squirms. She never really wanted you." Then he leans forward, right over Casca's head, as if she were no more than a cushion or a pillow, and puts a hand on Guts's cheek. "I'm the only one who wants you." "Griffith!" Guts cries out. "Griffith!" Casca keens, and a shadow crawls up her belly and makes her chin glow and her front teeth tingle. She reaches out to hold her lover's hands as they spiral up with her. It feels like heaven, even though Guts's palm is strangely clammy in hers, and the sounds coming out of his mouth this time are more prey than predator. Short, wild, panicky inhales. In the end, it's Griffith who gives himself away. It happens on a spring evening when they're out checking their snares for quarry, and Casca finds the courage to ask, "How did you get better?" Her question is met with a mild, questioning smile. "You were tortured," she says lamely. "In the Tower of Conviction." God, Casca, as if he doesn't know that. How did you rally from injuries so severe? Casca is just looking to fill in some gaps. She's not trying to interrogate her partner, nor catch him out on anything. He could attribute his recovery to a hardy constitution, for all she cares, to the latest advances in medicine, to purple, magical, sparkling fairy dust. Anything he said, Casca would have accepted. But instead of an answer, Griffith levels a dark stare at her. "Was it you?" he asks. "Have you been planting these foolish ideas in his head?" "Huh?" "Just the other day, Guts asked me why it is he cannot go into the city." As he speaks, Griffith looks out toward the capital. The castle is visible from the spot, breathtaking in its scale and magnitude, with great sweeping bridges and hundreds of wing-like projections. He said he's tired of fighting trolls and goblins in the woods, and that there must be more suitable opponents for him in Falconia's Colosseum. "I've tried to appease his bloodlust by opening new gashes in the World Spiral Tree once a month, so I can manifest fresh foes for him. But the tree is dying, and I am diminished." If he starts to doubt his happiness, it's only a matter of time before... Here he trails off. He doesn't utter the word glamour, but Casca can subtly sense its outline in the cottage, in Griffith's otherworldly beauty, and the timelessness of their new life. A familiar chasm opens up before her, and it has a woman's name. She bends her mind over the hall to hear it echo, "Elaine." "My dream is dead," Griffith spits, "by my own hand. I picked it up and wrung its alabaster neck." The reason is obvious, but he says it anyway. "I did it for him. Oh, I don't regret it. Faced with the same choice, I believe I would do it again, but Casca..." And here his eyes soften a bit. "You must know it too. You did not need to be here. You are supplementary." Through the blood rushing in her ears, she hears another voice. It's Guts. Guts is calling out to them from what seems like a continent away, and loping their way with the boy astride his shoulders. As he approaches, he seems to break down by increments. His forelock whitens, his left arm withers into a stump, and his right eye becomes a sunken cavity, a turbid pond with a dead fish in it. As for the boy, the boy is gone entirely. Casca whirls about, mind screaming. But the view from this side isn't any better. The city walls are rubble. The buildings are... less than that. Between this clearing and Falconia, the ground is littered with the bones of men, as well as their horses and their armaments. And in the distance, Casca sees the castle as Griffith must see it every day. A smoking husk of stone and marble, pathetically pink in the last scrawny slant of sunset.
"Check the rest of them."
"I'm afraid so," Griffith answers Guts. "All we've caught is Jimmy Mario." He holds up the beast in question by one of its enormous ears while it thrashes and meeps.
"Ah, bother,"
Guts groans, tapping his cheek with a sword pommel.
"Should we head back to the cottage?"
"Yes, that sounds like a good idea." Griffith peers over Guts's shoulder at her. "Doesn't it, Casca?" So that's how it is. Years ago, her heart was overgrown with thorns. Sharp, nasty, hideous nodules pointing both outward and inward. And that's why sometimes she breaks out in a cold sweat while peeling onions or mending a glove.
and that's why she cannot think about the Band of the Hawk without horripilating. What is she to do now? Guts is looking at her with a touch of annoyance. Come on, come on, hurry it up already. Griffith with stolid expectation. Casca is a bit rusty in the physical department, but she used to be very nimble, with top-tier reflexes. And Griffith has admitted he doesn't have his full powers anymore. If she were to sidle up to Guts, grab his dagger, make a run at Griffith? No. All she has to do is target Guts. Make as though she'll slit his throat, and then Griffith will. Surely Griffith will. What do you say, Casca?
Yo, Casca.
On second thought, they're right. She is Casca now, and not Elaine, so it's already better than it was before. It can be better still, if only they can stick together, seize every glittering moment that they can, forget about the past and its thousand native horrors. That is what Griffith wants too. He loves Guts, in his own limited, all-consuming way, and he cares for Casca and the child as well. He must, or they wouldn't be here. I don't think the wall is ugly, Casca murmurs as they file back home. In fact, maybe they should extend it, so it blocks more of Falconia from view. There are only bad things out there. In the cottage, there is peace and warmth and family, the only family that's left to them. Already, the crackle of bones underfoot has given way to the agreeable plash of mud. When she looks out toward the high road, she sees not ghosts, but what is colloquially known as ghost hills, a vast, romantic sweep of heath. Griffith puts a hand on her shoulder, and Casca shudders, if only for a moment. The sky is a metallic blue, grading into periwinkle. She hopes they'll make it back to the cottage before dark. The end.